Welcome to Dreaming of Canadles. Waking is always the most difficult time of the day for me, as this is when my depression is at its strongest, and when I'm at my weakest to fight it. It can get so strong that at times I could feel the weight of it on my chest. This was at its worst when I was waking outside in the desert on hot summer mornings, as I would often recall a similar day. That day was perhaps the most dramatic of my ill-fated suicide attempts. It came on a July 4th afternoon in 2017, when I laid out in the 110-degree heat outside Barstow, after my previous life had fully imploded. The paramedics who found me told me that if someone hadn't noticed me and called for help, I would have died within the hour. Because of this, I know just how fatal these desert afternoons can be, and this has always been enticing, especially on summer mornings. I know that I don't even have to do anything to kill myself. All I have to do is lie there. It was during one of these mornings that the desire to do exactly this was overwhelming. By this time, I had been living on the streets of Coachella Valley for close to 2 years, and there was no indication that I would ever get off them, despite the small amount of progress I had made during this time. This mostly related to money. Like with most homeless people, the lack of money has always been more of a symptom of my problems than the actual problem. But earning a little money at least gave me some independence. There would also be moments of hope during these years, when I thought that I could actually rise above the bottom through which I had fallen. Not just the hope that I could get back on my feet, but that I could even experience some token of success. But these moments would all be fleeting, followed by an even stronger sense of despair. In spite of my progress, I still wasn't any closer to having a normal life. And the longer this went on, the more depressed I got. That morning, I faced an impossible choice: do nothing and die, or continue doing something that was in many ways less than nothing and could very well never end. Even worse was the fear that I would eventually stop trying, like most of the other homeless people I knew. People who wandered around town like zombies, going through the motions of life without actually living it. Every day I would see my future in these people, and this would horrify me. My choice was not that dissimilar to another. The choice that the protagonist of my novel faced. This choice unfolded after the SS guards dragged him inside the commander's office in Theresienstadt.
Hermann became surprised when he saw an SS officer waiting for him, a man named Klaus, who had once been his friend and who he hadn't seen in more than 20 years.
"How are you?" Klaus asked with a casualness that shook Hermann, though he too looked surprised, probably at how terrible my grandfather must have looked. My grandfather saw the surprise, and he saw Klaus desperately trying to hide it. He saw him try to focus on anything but his surprise.
"How am I?" Hermann uttered,
while unable to hold back a grimace. As you can imagine, this isn't a social call. That I can imagine. But what I can't imagine is its purpose. I'm provisionally the head of the Prague office of what is commonly referred to in Germany as the Kripo, Klaus told him. The criminal police. Though, unlike in Germany, our office isn't staffed by career detectives. We simply don't have the personnel at our disposal. This means that while we are capable of solving simple and ordinary crimes. I still don't understand why you've come here, Herman demanded. My office has spent the past few days sifting through the archives of the Prague police, and it's come to my understanding that you were among the best detectives in Yosefov. If not the best. It's also come to my understanding that you were someone who always embraced challenges, and unlike many of your colleagues, even sought them out. Again, Herman was surprised. These revelations surprised him almost as much as the man who had made them. What surprised him wasn't actually the revelations themselves, but that they had once applied to him, as he was now someone far different than the man who had been all those things. They existed long ago, he stated. We have a situation there, Klaus stated back. In Yosefov, in the past few weeks, someone has murdered 3 SS officers in the district. Brutally. Herman understood the words Klaus was telling him, but not their context at all, which made them seem nonsensical. Why are you telling me all this? He asked, with his head shaking in a more or less continuous manner. You can't possibly think I care. We would involve the local police, if they weren't so useless, Klaus continued, as if he hadn't heard what Herman had said. Though I think he just didn't care what Herman had to say. We can't tell if they're all incompetent or just acting that way. Herman grinned at this. He grinned at how his former colleagues were likely creating a quagmire of feckless acquiescence for people like Klaus. You've read The Good Soldier, Schweik, he remarked with his grin still on his face. Passive resistance is ingrained in the Czech character. But not in the Jewish one, Klaus insisted. Herman realized that Klaus was finally coming to the point of the conversation. But he still didn't know what the point was, so he asked him. As I've alluded to, Klaus said, my office doesn't have the capabilities to solve this crime. To be honest, the SS is not adept at tracking down murderers anywhere, even in Germany. Maybe it's because you give them medals, Herman growled. And Yosefov is alien to us, Klaus went on. It's alien even to me after all these years. We get lost just driving through it. I still don't understand what you want from me. I'm authorized to offer you your old job back for this one case. My grandfather wasn't sure how to react to this. He didn't know whether to be aghast or humored. Finally, he decided on apathetic. Why would you think I'd take it? He asked. I have in my jacket pocket, Klaus answered while touching this. Papers approved by the highest echelons of the SS. They will provide you with safe passage across Axis lines if you can succeed in finding those responsible for the murders.
Hermann didn't really believe that there were such papers, either in Klaus's pocket or anywhere else. And he certainly didn't believe that they would give them to him if there were. But even if he had believed everything Klaus had said, his answer would have been the same as it was. I won't do it.
You've misunderstood me, Hermann, Klaus said, with a surprise that neither his voice nor face could mask. I wasn't asking you, he added. Either you come back with me to Prague and help me find the killer, or those men outside the door will shoot you right now.
Hermann didn't respond to this.
He just stared at Klaus. He was angry at him for making him complicit in his death when he had expected and wanted the opposite. He wanted to scream at him, to demand that he be shot without conditions. But this in itself would be complicity.
Well, Klaus uttered, while again expressing surprise,
probably from my grandfather's utter lack of reaction to his threat.
I'm thinking about it, Hermann muttered. And he really was.
He was thinking of some way he could extricate himself from the snare that he had just been trapped in.
Writing about Hermann's impossible choice is what helped me through mine as I lay there in the sand on that broiling hot summer morning. As impossible as my choice seemed, it was nothing in comparison to the one that Hermann had faced. So mine no longer seemed that impossible. Slowly, I rose to my feet, making the same choice Hermann would make, the only one that had a path forward. Thank you for listening to Dreaming of Canadles.